Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
If the eyes are the windows to the soul, what is the gut to the skin? It just might be the answer to all the itching, biting, and scratching that plagues our cats and dogs. Some of the most common reasons pets are taken to their veterinarians are allergies. Sadly, a cure for these maladies is not always possible. Control can be difficult. Treatment options can sometimes compound the problem. The internet abounds with lotions, potions, and supplements that promise relief. But do they? And do they do it safely? My guest is Dr. Kristen Holm. She's a board-certified veterinary dermatologist. We'll discuss allergies, traditional treatment protocols, and some exciting new advances. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages. The Pet Doctor.
Brought to you by
Doggy Goo, the veterinary dermatologist formulated answer to your dog's allergies. 100% natural, Doggy Goo combines the proven benefits of probiotics, yeast cell wall extracts, and the proprietary blend of environmental extracts in one tasty peanut butter treat. Visit doggygoo.com, DoggyGoo.com.
For more information on our InfoSeed sponsors, visit
PetLifeRadio.com.
Click on InfoSeed sponsors.
Buster, you're telling me my dog food products can't go on your shelves?
That's right. Didn't pass one of my Petco certified nutrition checklists. Sorry, Wayne.
Who made these checklists?
Geniuses. Very smart guys.
Well, it's good enough for most grocery stores.
Do you see cheese puffs on my shelves? Mayonnaise? Soda pop?
No.
That's because I ain't running no grocery store, Wayne. Your pets will get better nutrition, I guarantee it. Petco, where the healthy pets go.
Enter the code DOCTOR10, D-O-C-T-O-R, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
I play tennis because I love to, but inside, I want to win. Take away the court, the net, I might not be a player, but I'll always be a competitor. Lady Foot Locker understands that.
Lady Foot Locker, the first to carry Adidas off-court shoes and the gear that goes with them.
If you play your best, there's no regret.
Lady Foot Locker, one place. Every woman.
Go to LadyFootLocker.com and enter the code AFDOC1LF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2LF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at LadyFootLocker.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley, the giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out in the world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Holm, I see itchy, bitey, scratchy dogs in Southern California every day coming through my door, and it is so frustrating. Why did you decide to become a dermatologist? Do you like frustration?
You might say that I do.
I've wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a 13-year-old reading James Herriot's books about being a country vet in England. Once I had been in general practice for a couple of years, I decided to specialize on dermatology, seeing as around one-third of all the cases I saw had some sort of skin ailment. A board-certified dermatologist has completed vet school, an internship, and 2 to 3 year residency before passing the rigorous boards, which is a 2-day written and practical test. I completed this process in 1999 and have thoroughly enjoyed the daily puzzles and challenges that dermatology presents. So yes, I do get frustrated, and I like to relieve the frustration of other veterinarians that present their cases to me.
And thankfully, there are boarded dermatologists like yourself, and we do have some in my area. And there are times when the pet owner and I will look at each other and going, you know, before we ruin this relationship, I need to send you to somebody else with more initials after their name. So thank you for being there and all of your colleagues. You really do serve a good purpose. So with allergies, you know, I have allergies myself. It was worse when I was a child, getting a little bit better now. And I know for me, it's allergens in the air. What are some of the most common causes for allergies in pets?
The same things that cause allergies in humans actually cause allergies in pets. The most frequent things that we see in dogs, when I do allergy skin testing, which is a procedure very similar to the one that you may have had since you yourself have allergies.
And it was ouchy, yes.
Yeah. The most common allergens that I see dogs allergic to are things like house dust mites, molds. Those are things that are indoors and year-round. We also see seasonal allergens such as weed pollens, tree pollens, grass pollens, and even things like cats. We actually have dogs that are allergic to cats. We have dogs that are allergic to people, believe
it
or not. So just like people can be allergic to cats and dogs, they can be allergic to us. But fortunately, that is a rare case. And the most common things we see are things like house dust mites, storage mites that can be found in foods that are not kept under a tight seal. And the other things that we are allergic to as well, like the pollens outside.
So you're talking about things like house mites, and I am not the best housekeeper in the world, and vacuuming, et cetera, is not high on my list. But how would somebody get rid of house mites? You know, I know there's various products. Do they work?
It's absolutely impossible to get rid of house mites. It is, no matter how good of a cleaner you are, I think it always brings a sigh of relief when people find out their pet is not allergic to house mites, but that, although most pets are. And that's one of the first things that people ask me is, what can I do to get rid of that? And certainly vacuuming, keeping your humidity in your house low, those things can help, but it's absolutely impossible to get rid of them completely. So that's why it's important to try to really nip it in the bud and actually change the way that the body is reacting to these environmental allergens.
When a puppy comes through my door or a kitten that comes through my door and is already doing the itching, biting, scratching, yes, one of the first things I look for here in Southern California are going to be fleas. And then I don't find them. And it's like, uh-oh, I think I'm going to be in for a long one with this pup. What's the typical age that dogs and cats first start showing allergies, and what are they due to? Is there a difference in age-wise?
Absolutely. And in dogs and cats, cats are a little bit different. Cats can develop allergies just about at any age. However, dogs most commonly present with allergies somewhere around 18 months to 2 years, up until 5 years of age. It's very uncommon for dogs to first start with allergy signs over 5 years of age, unless they've moved to a different part of the country. So we do have some dogs, though, that do actually begin starting signs of allergies that are younger than 18 months, say even at 6 months of age. And typically, when a dog starts with allergy signs under the age of a year, we start thinking more food allergies. But I have had my share, especially of Westies and Bichon Frise. For some reason, the little white dogs like to get allergies really, really young.
So you have this little young puppy with itchy, bitey, scratchies, and you go, okay, food allergies. And many times, clients will come in saying, all right, well, I've tried this food and this food and this food, and it's still a problem. It can't be the food. Your response to that one?
Right. It doesn't matter which actual brand you use, and a lot of times people will just simply change from one brand to another or one flavor to another. The interesting thing about food allergies is that animals become allergic to a certain protein source in the diet. And it isn't necessarily a grain in their diet. I know the grain-free diets are very popular now. And just like with human diets, we go through fads in dog diets, and they tend to follow very closely the fads in people that people use for diets. So the things that are the most common allergens food-wise for animals actually are beef and wheat. So you do have a grain, wheat, but we can't overlook the fact that beef is one of the most common allergens in dog foods. And the other thing would be chicken is becoming very popular as a food allergen because a lot of dog foods just simply have chicken. And there's nothing special about beef, chicken, wheat, corn, soy, any of those kind of things that dogs can become allergic to. It just is actually the protein molecule size, and without getting into too much technical chemical structure talk, it basically just means that if a molecule of a protein is big enough, the body can react to it if the dog is prone to that. So the most important thing when you're looking for a food to change to if you think your dog has a food allergy, it really is a matter of changing to a different protein source that the dog has never been exposed to and therefore cannot be allergic to yet, although they could potentially develop an allergy. So there are a number of diets usually sold through veterinarians that are limited antigen diets or diets that only have one protein source and one carbohydrate source. There are also some diets on the market that are, in a sense, pre-digested, which means that they've taken those big molecules, chopped them up into tiny small pieces of amino acids, and so it's basically too small for the immune system to recognize. And it's similar to the hypoallergenic baby formulas for babies that get real colicky.
It sounds as though, and it's true, you know, everything that I was taught, you're just reinforcing that allergies can be so problematic, it seems like, at any age. What are some of the common ways that they'll present? So, yes, I mentioned itchy, bitey, scratchy. So a pet owner says, I have an itchy pet. How do I know this is allergies, or how do I think that it's maybe due to fleas? And, of course, they can see that usually, but how do they know?
Well, fortunately, at least where I live in the Midwest, and we don't have the problem of fleas that you might in Southern California. We do have fleas, but flea products that are on the market still work fabulously up here. I know that in parts of the country it's becoming more of a problem. So, you know, we don't have the luxury of saying, well, it might be fleas. So usually when they're itchy, scratchy, bitey, it usually is an allergy, and we have to dig a bit deeper. So the interesting thing with animals is that they don't show their allergies in the same way that people do. And I think that some people think, well, if my dog has allergies, then it must have to be coughing, sneezing, have watery, runny nose, eyes, that kind of thing. Dogs very rarely have those symptoms. They can happen, but it's not common. In fact, the most common symptom is those itchy, scratchy, bitey. You see dogs that are scratching their ears, chewing their paws. It's amazing how many pet owners have their dogs are licking their paws, but they think that that's completely normal because they must be cleaning them because they're walking outside and they want to get them clean. And when, in fact, a dog that constantly licks and chews its paws is not normal. And a dog that used to have white paws and now has reddish-brown paws, that's a sign of excessive licking, which is almost a hallmark of allergies. So it's important to get those pets evaluated early. The sooner that we can get them on treatment, the better, and the less likely they'll have to be on a lifetime of medications that can be harmful in the long run.
We see them so often, and there are so many over-the-counter products and kind of wives' tale and urban legends of what can cause and what can cure. Several years ago, I'll always remember, it was a owner came in, I had never seen her before, a mature woman, and had some little white fluffy dog. And yes, we do seem to see more white dogs than anyone else with allergies. And she had the little brown paws. She says, oh, it has splinter mites. Going, huh, splinter mites. I know I didn't go every day to veterinary school, but I don't ever remember hearing about splinter mites. She says, oh, I've gotten rid of them in the past. Really? And what did you do? She says, oh, I get a bleach solution, and I just soak my dog's paws in bleach, and it makes it go away. Going, yeah, that would make the brown go away. Probably not a good idea. What are some of the strange cures that you've heard that people should really stay away from?
Oh, well, I guess by the time they see me, that's kind of been filtered out, and they've been seeing their vet and getting so many real prescription, real tried and true therapies, and they're at their wit's end. But yes, bleach is one of those. It reminds me of looking in the very first edition of Muller and Kirk's Small Animal Dermatology, which was published back probably before I was born. And it was interesting because there are a number of different treatments that were not tried and true but were used. And some of those are things like bleach. Well, bleach kills just about anything, so you know, including our skin. So it may not be the best thing to do, but it may have worked, and that's why people think that that's a good thing. Other things, I've heard of people using turpentine. These are old. I don't think people really use them so much anymore. But it's amazing what people used to do. And now, fortunately, we have so many more advances and real treatments that are out there.
You were talking about, yes, turpentine, and I remember, you know, hearing for horses, people did all sorts of things with horses, using tar and things like this. There used to be shampoos that were tar-based and really stinky things. Well, now the shampoos seem to have gotten better, and people say, well, I'm using medicated shampoos. I got it at the pet store, a medicated shampoo. Or they're using their own shampoos. I'd love to have you give your expert opinion on shampoos, the good, the bad, the ugly about using them on our pets.
Yes, I've learned a lot through my education as a dermatologist, and I'm actually learning more now because it's one of my interests is shampoos and ingredients, because when I take a shower and I look at my shampoo bottle, it all looks like a foreign language, a lot of chemicals in there, and what exactly does this mean? And the move towards natural seems like a good one, but when you look at shampoos that are quote-unquote natural and they still look like they have chemical names, what does that all mean? And then you have shampoos that say they're natural and it looks like they say they're coconut-based, but they still have the coconut-based ingredients. Actually, if you break them down into the parts of the coconut, they are actually... they have chemical names to them. So it's really hard to pick out the natural from the not natural. And I guess what I'm looking for in a shampoo is one that is not a harsh detergent, because that can strip too many oils. It can actually irritate the skin. And I'm looking for something that will rinse away nicely, because you don't want any residue that can also irritate the skin. And then I'm looking for active ingredients. A lot of shampoos have the same type of bases. So what you're really looking for in dogs that have skin problems, you really need to just look at the active ingredients and then secondarily make sure that it has a vehicle or a base that's not irritating. So it depends on the pet's condition. There are anything from dogs that have scaly skin, things like sulfur ingredients, and salicylic acid. Those are things that help with flaking. If you have a dog that has chronic infections, there are ingredients like chlorhexidine. Myconazole is a good one for yeast infections. I too stay away from the tar ingredients. And those shampoos were out when I was doing my training. I never liked them because, in my opinion, if it smells really bad, it probably isn't really good for your skin. And when something is potentially carcinogenic, I stay away from it. So I've never been one to use tar shampoos. And there are a number of things out there that are much more superior. The interesting thing that's coming out now for shampoos and actually topical ingredients, we're seeing a shift in what we think causes allergies. And it's always been an inside-out type of theory. But now we're seeing there's a lot from the outside of the skin that causes allergies. And we're finding that dogs and actually people with allergies have a defective skin barrier.
That I was just reading was, about some shampoos yeah. that had said that it had an epidermal barrier function. So
absolutely.
Is that what you're talking
about? That's the hot topic in topical therapy. So the idea being that normal healthy skin has a number of different lipids and oils and different things in it that protect the skin and keep the bad bacteria out, protect the allergens from penetrating the skin. What happens is, in animals and people that don't have a really healthy barrier, you might see it as dry skin, and they might just show up as, they might feel itchy and uncomfortable. But what that translates to is things in the environment are getting through the skin where it shouldn't. And so if we can restore that barrier, we can actually limit the exposure to those harmful substances that are causing the problems. So that's a really big thing right now.
Now, you'd mentioned products that are harsh, and you'd think of baby shampoo. Well, if I have a human baby shampoo, that must be really mild because I use it on babies. So is a product like that okay to use on cats and dogs?
I would not use that. A couple of reasons. The pH of a dog's skin is different than a person's skin, and it's about it's neutral, about 7. A person's skin is about 5. And when you see something that's pH balanced for people, it may not be absolutely appropriate for dogs. And interestingly, in the reading that I've done on shampoos, a shampoo doesn't even have to, if it says it's pH balanced for people, it doesn't even have to demonstrate that it's at a 5, which is what pH for people's skin is. So it's really hard. The whole pH thing is a little confusing. Baby shampoo, most baby shampoos as well as most detergents and shampoos have something called sodium lauryl sulfate, SLS, and that is it's a very effective detergent and degreaser, but if you use it frequently, it can be irritating, especially in some animals that have, especially if you're missing some of it, if that epidermal barrier, the skin barrier, is a little bit deficient, it's going to be more sensitive to ingredients like that. So I would stay away from baby shampoo, and in fact, I didn't even use that kind of shampoo on my own babies when they were little.
Well, good for you. You actually practice what you preach. Now, the next question, Dr. Holm, that I get so frequently, you have a dog that is normal skinned or a kitty that has normal skin, and the owner wants to know, so how often should I bathe it?
That's a good question, and that's a question we get frequently. And the answer, there's a myth out there that you should never bathe a dog unless it's dirty. Well, that's not entirely true. If you're going to use a harsh shampoo, I would say sure. But most dogs get a little bit dirty outside, and they might start smelling a little oily because the oils they produce get exposed to air. Those become kind of smelly, just like if you open a bottle of olive oil and leave it on your counter for a long time, in a few weeks, it's going to smell kind of stinky.
So same a little kind rancid. Of
dog. Right? Yeah. So those rancid oils, we want to wash those off. So you want to use a gentle shampoo, and if it's gentle enough, you could actually bathe a dog. And if it gives moisturizers in it too, you can actually bathe a dog every day and not cause any problems. I'm not suggesting that. I don't think that's necessary. However, our dogs are becoming family members themselves, and people like to cuddle up with them just like they cuddle up with their family. And you want to have a dog that smells good. So I would say as long as you pick a nice, gentle, natural shampoo, you can bathe your heart's content. As long as you're using one that has moisturizers or following with a conditioner, you're fine. But as far as dogs with allergies, you really need to bathe at least 2 to 3 times a week. And that's especially during their peak allergy season. The reason for that is because allergens are absorbed directly through the skin. It's not just inhaled. And in fact, inhaled allergens in dogs are not nearly the problem that they are in people. So the problem really is in the allergens penetrating through the skin. And like we said, that is part of a barrier problem as well. But when you can wash their fur and skin frequently, you're actually removing those allergens. And allergens, especially pollens, are very sticky. They like to bind to the hairs. So just rinsing them with water, squirting them off with a hose once in a while, not going to do it. So you need to give them a gentle detergent that's going to wash their hair, remove those allergens from the skin, and you can significantly reduce the exposure to the allergens and then reduce their symptoms of allergies as well.
Wow. Dr. Kristen Holm, you have some awesome bits of information that people having pets that have so frequently allergies, I'm sure they're enjoying. Well, I hope they all stay tuned. We're going to break for just a short message. We'll be right back with Dr. Kristen Holm talking about allergies in our pets. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PetMeds. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PetMeds, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, DOCTOR, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
Whether they're big, small, hairy, or whatever, you're going to need gear for your feet. And Kids Foot Locker's got all the great shoes and gear that'll get you in the game.
Go to KidsFootLocker.com
enter the code AFDOC1KF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2KF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at kidsfootlocker.com.
And cover those funky feet.
Celebrate your special occasion and give her this classic semi-eternity band created with 1-carat brilliant diamonds, channel set in 14-carat white gold. Exclusively yours from ICE.com. Free shipping over $150, free returns, and 30-day money-back guarantee.
Go to ICE.com and use promo code ACTFP and get 20% off your purchase. Or use promo code ADTFP and get 20% off at Diamond.com. ICE.com or Diamond.com. Get 20% off from Pet Life Radio.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Holm, I am learning so much from you, and so many things you're also saying, going, okay, yeah, I say that. Yes, I'm still on the right track. I love that. All right, so we've been shampooing, we're trying to take care of our pets, you're saying from that outside in, but from the inside out. In the introduction, I was talking about our gut really helping our dogs with itchy, bitey, scratchies, and a lot of people are probably going, what? How can our intestines, how can our gut help our skin? Inform us, how can that happen?
Well, it's interesting. The world of allergies in dogs and people is vastly changing, and the research that's coming out is completely turning everything that we have thought was true on its head. So in the past, steroids were used extensively. They work, they take away the itching, but really and truly, that's a Band-Aid, and it's a Band-Aid that can cause a lot of side effects later on down the road. So researchers are trying to move away from steroids or our reliance on steroids as much as possible. One of the most interesting advances, in my opinion, in the world of allergies is the use of probiotics. Now, probiotics is something that everybody's familiar with. Probiotics are found in yogurt. Probiotics are found in a number of different foods, being added into a lot of foods because we've known for years that probiotics help regulate people's digestive systems. And like a lot of things, if it works for people, it must work for dogs. So we are using probiotics in dogs with GI problems. And that's all been fine and good, and everybody knows that that works. The interesting thing is the more that probiotics are being researched, we're finding that they actually have an influence on the immune system. And why is the immune system so important with allergies? Well, almost everything I've come to learn as a veterinarian, almost everything that affects a dog, a lot of diseases are related to the immune system. It seems like it's difficult for the immune system to stay in balance. You either have an immune system that is underreactive and getting ambushed by bacteria, viruses, those kind of things, and fighting to stay ahead of those. Or you have an immune system that's overreactive, and that's manifested by autoimmune diseases. And we see that increasing in people, things like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, hypothyroidism. A lot of these have immune-mediated basis to them. But allergies are also an effect of the immune system being overactive. It's almost as if the immune system is just charged and ready to go and wants something to do. And with our current health status and the health status in this country, we're so healthy and we have such good health care that fortunately, a lot of animals and people are able to fight off and are able to prevent themselves from getting serious illnesses. A lot of the viruses that used to kill people, bacteria used to kill people, we have vaccines and medicines for. So it's almost as if we've gone the other way. Our immune system needs something to do, and so it looks for something to fight. And it may not be something that really needs to be fought off, like allergies or like our own cells in autoimmune diseases. So what we found with probiotics is that probiotics will change the way that the immune system reacts to things, and it helps to balance the immune system. We know that in studies in people and in dogs, probiotics can decrease the amount of IL-10 in a dog's and a person's body. What is IL-10? It's some letters and a number. But without getting into too much detail about the way the immune system works, the immune system has a bunch of cells, basically, that produce ammunition against the invaders of the body. IL-10 is one of those ammunition things. And what happens is if it produces too much IL-10, then it can manifest itself. One of those things that it show, the symptoms that show up are some of the symptoms of allergies. It starts a whole cascade of mediators and inflammation, an inflammation cascade, if you will. So what happens is if you take probiotics, it can actually decrease some of this inflammation. So in essence, taking good bacteria in your body can be an anti-inflammatory. So that's what we're finding, the relationship between what you take into your gut and the way that it fights allergies. The other thing that's important is if you have a healthy gut, it actually becomes more leak-proof. And just like the skin that has a faulty or a leaky barrier, if the gut has a leaky barrier, you're absorbing things from the environment, which is the things that you eat in your gut. It can actually enter your bloodstream if you have a leaky gut. And probiotics help to tighten those leaks and to make it healthier and strengthen that part of the immune system. So you're actually decreasing the chances of developing food allergies as well.
I think people would be fascinated if most people, I have a feeling, if you were to ask, what is part of your immune system? And they might say, okay, your lymph nodes. And maybe they would say the spleen or the thymus if they've had any biology. But I have a feeling most people would never think of your gut. You know, your gut is responsible for absorbing food, and that's what it does. But actually, the gut is the largest immune organ of our entire bodies.
Absolutely. And probably followed by the skin if you base it on surface area. There's a lot of surface area in the gut and a lot of surface area in the skin.
So some people would say, all right, so you tell me that in yogurt has some of these probiotics and other foods, then I could just give my dog some yogurt that we see advertised on TV that has all these probiotics. But I have a feeling you would say, oh, but no, there's something better. Tell us what you've gotten involved with it. And I find it fascinating because you are somewhat the antithesis of most Western-trained veterinarians. Myself, Western trained, also learning more and more about complementary medicine. And it seems like what you've gotten involved with is very much complementary medicine. What's this product?
Well, I hesitate to say that it's complementary medicine. I'm very much rooted in Western medicine. I'm a practicing veterinary dermatologist. I prescribe medications on a regular basis. I prescribe shampoos. But the interesting thing about veterinary dermatologists is when we are treating allergies, our goal is not to put those Band-Aids on, like prednisone, but we want to instead try to nip it in the bud and treat it at its source. So the source of the allergy is actually the immune system that's going out of balance. I guess you could say allergy vaccines that people get and dogs get is almost homeopathy. There's a world of difference, though, because homeopathy is taking very minuscule, almost undetectable parts of things that are bothering the body and giving it to them. And what we're doing is we're giving the allergies or the allergens that are usually when the allergens that are penetrating through the skin are causing the skin immune system to pick it up and then start an immune reaction from that route. But when you give it in a different way, whether it's under the skin or, as I'll talk about in a minute, under the tongue or orally, you're presenting those allergens to the immune system in a different way. And it's actually resulting in a more of a tolerance type of a reaction. So rather than getting itchy skin, it's telling the body, hey, this is okay. This is not something that is something you need to fight. So I wouldn't say that this is really complementary medicine that we're getting involved with. Probiotics, I think everything, all medicines, that just about any medicine that's been ever invented is rooted in nature and then improved upon in the lab. And probiotics are no different. So probiotics are bacteria, beneficial bacteria. The one that we use in our new supplement that we came out with uses a specific probiotic called BC30, which is extremely, it's a spore-forming bacteria that produces a hard shell that protects itself through the GI system so that it's not degraded. A lot of probiotics are actually ruined or killed in the gut because of the low acidity found in the intestines and in the stomach. So this one is much more biologically available. The other thing that is in our product is called, it's a yeast cell wall extract, and what that does is it's an immune booster, and it's found in human medicine. The same manufacturer makes a human counterpart called Epicor, and that's found in a number of supplements that are getting a lot of good press as far as keeping people healthy and balancing the immune system. So what we've done is we've our product is called Doggy Goo, which has a cute sounding name, but it is actually very scientifically based. The goo comes from the peanut butter that is added to the ingredients to allow the dog to keep it in the mouth as long as possible to allow maximal absorption. And it's just kind of a catchy word. It kind of makes you think of the goo that marathon runners use to keep their energy up. So, but the ingredients consist of a probiotic, a yeast cell wall extract, both to balance the immune system. And then we also took some of these environmental substances, the pollens that cause problems in animals, and it's actually being given as a natural substance orally to encourage the body to tolerate it rather than get a true allergic reaction through the skin.
Now, you keep mentioning dogs. Can people mm-hmm. use this with cats?
At this point, we don't recommend using the same product with cats. We are planning on developing a similar product for cats, but because cats are not the same, they're not little dogs. We can never think of cats as little dogs. So cats have their own little requirements. They have their own things that they're allergic to. For the dog product, we have a proprietary blend of all of these substances that dogs can become allergic to. In cats, they have a different set. So I would not recommend, plus the number, the amount of probiotics and yeast cell extract that they need is a little different. So whereas I don't think it would hurt a cat, I would not recommend giving the dog product to cats.
You probably have to come up with a tuna-flavored one versus a peanut butter-flavored one anyway.
Probably, yes.
So when a client has a dog with these itchies and thinks, this sounds like a good product, where can they find it?
Okay. It is available online, and it's available through our company name is Healthy Goo. So www.healthygoo.com. You can purchase it online. It's also available to retailers, so they can resell it in their... our marketing niche is going to be the pet store boutique and groomers who see dogs and cats on a regular basis with skin problems. Veterinarians can certainly retail it out of their clinics as well. I'm not suggesting this as the cure-all for allergies and the first step for people to do. I think that if you think your dog has allergies, the first thing you need to do is visit with your vet, because secondary bacterial and yeast infections are very common, and they need to be addressed, because no product or treatment out there is going to make your dog feel better if there's a skin infection. They absolutely need to be treated with antibiotics and medicated shampoos, things like that. The other thing I would highly, highly recommend is, before it gets too late and you're on the road of medication and infection after infection after infection, please get your dog checked by your vet, and even request a referral to a dermatologist to do skin testing so that you can nip that in the bud. What we have noticed is that there are only somewhere around, I don't know the exact number, but somewhere around 200 dermatologists in the United States, not much more worldwide. So clearly there is a significant part of the pet-owning population that does not have access. And I know that in Southern California you have an abundance of allergists and dermatologists there. But there is a significant part of the pet-owning population that does not have access to a veterinary dermatologist. And whereas your primary vet is able to do blood testing, that's not as preferable as the skin testing for developing an allergy vaccine. So we recognize that there is a significant part of pet owners out there that may not have access to something that may actually treat the allergy right at the source. So this product that we have developed is aiming to treat a number of pets that may not have access or the ability, whether it's financial or geographic, to meet with a veterinary dermatologist and take care of it through traditional means.
Dr. Holman, as we just wrap up right now, you've been mentioning allergy testing, and yes, the gold standard being the intradermal skin testing versus a practice such as my own is not going to do that, but may do blood testing and looking for inhaled allergies. I know there are some of my colleagues who use this blood test to food allergy test. Very briefly, what are your feelings about doing a blood test to look for food allergies?
Oh, Dr. Cruz, I'm so happy you brought that up because I cannot stress enough, the blood test for allergies is not reflective of a dog's allergies to food. So I would definitely save your money, spend it elsewhere. I think it's a shame that companies out there are producing this, but it's clearly out of demand for it, that people keep hoping that it will work because it does. It is valid in people, but it is certainly not valid in dogs. And really the only way to diagnose a food allergy is by feeding them a special diet for at least 3 months.
Well, Dr. Kristen Holm, thank you so much. The information you've had, I'm sure, is going to save many a fitful night for dogs and cats and their owners. So, as you said, if your pet has the itchy, bitey, scratchies, the first thing that you should really do is see your routine, regular veterinarian, see if you can come up with an answer, see what that problem is, how to control it. Healthy Goo may really be a marvelous adjunct. So, Dr. Kristen Holm, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, if you have an itchy, bitey dog, cat, see your veterinarian. If you have questions, they're always the best person to ask. But you can always send me an email at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. So thank you to our producer, Mark Winter. You always do an awesome job. Please stay tuned for more information and come back again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner you can be. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.